Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
We're live.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is June. June.
Yes, nigga, June.
Oh, shit. 9?
No, it's the 6th.
Oh, shit. Is it? Okay.
Yes, it's the 6th. I'm doing all kinds of shit.
Damn.
Jesus Christ.
I think it just really be making up
hate. I didn't make that one up. I just pulled that one out the air. I didn't have no idea what day it was. Like, I really have no idea what it's the 6th. Okay, June 6th. All right, cool. All right. How y'all doing today?
I'm good. My allergies have me on the ropes for a couple of days in a major way. Actually, mom was having similar symptoms in South Carolina, but I couldn't breathe and was dizzy. It almost felt like I had it felt more like something respiratory. And they had me on my neck. Like, I was a little bit scared.
Only it was that bad? Like,
it was really, I've never had, like, I have had it before where I've been running, like, in the park and I couldn't breathe. But that's because I'm literally in the middle of Central Park. But to wake up in my house and I can't breathe and I was dizzy. Like, I felt like I was high. Like, that's how dizzy I was. Like, I felt like I was high. And, I think what happened is, the last set of allergy meds I took, because I don't have anything prescribed, the last set of allergy meds I bought the generic brand instead of the real brand. So I had to go buy. Them shits was not doing it at all.
You got the cheap shit.
Yeah, I had to go get me some official shit from behind the counter.
From the pharmacy.
Yeah, man, that I had to show my ID for. Yeah. I had to go get that shit.
How you doing, bro? You've been kind of low lately, past couple of days. You been working hard?
Yeah, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, summertime.
I mean, I ain't trying to get on in your business and shit.
Yeah. I've just been, you know, getting in, man. You know, getting things done. The month of May was crazy for me. So a lot of shit I had put off.
Yeah, because you was traveling and you had the graduation and you had a lot of shit going on. I got to get out there. I forgot my damn picture, man.
Yeah, you left your picture. You left your hoodie. You know.
Well, hoodie, I wasn't tripping that hard on because it's hot. You know what I'm saying?
You might want to get that hoodie. Jordan been eyeing that hoodie, bro. You might lose it.
Young Jay can wear the little Morgan State hoodie. It's all good. I'll get another one. She can rep the MSU Golden Bears. You know, that's cool.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I do need my picture, though. I looked at that shit, too, and I left it right there. But I'll come out. I don't know. I'll get out there.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
All right, let's get started. It's hot now. It's summer.
It's humid. That's the thing. It's humid. It's sticky.
Yeah. Ew. Yeah, it's actually not, like, hot. Like, it's not, like, 95 or something. But it's definitely mad sticky.
It felt like summer today.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a summer day. It ain't a cloud in the sky, really. It's about 80-something and sticky. You know, if you walk around too much, you're definitely going to sweat. It's June. I guess it's to be expected.
Right.
You know, I kind of rather this than to be freezing, to be honest with you.
I would be fine with this if we had, like, a nice little breeze. That's all I need, just a little breeze. I just don't need to be sweating, like, the second I get out the house. Like, your clothes feel like they're sticking to you.
Yeah, you're definitely muggy, and you got the subway and all that shit. Speaking of subway, like, I mean, not to surprise me, we talked about this on the show before, but I'm seeing more and more, like, rat videos in conjunction with the subway lately.
So somebody gave a theory about this that makes a lot of sense, and Sean, you're our resident construction and urban planning expert, but somebody was saying, like, not that New York has never had a lot of new construction, but it's really overwhelming right now.
It is.
So obviously that wrote it out. But somebody also added that as neighborhoods get gentrified, these people get rid. You know, when you're in the hood, you have a kind of unspoken agreement with the cats of the hood. Like, the cats do what they do. You do what you do. You let them live. And, you know, some of these folks are rounding them up, taking them to the ASPCA. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they're the rodent control.
Yeah.
So you're bringing all these rats and stuff up from above ground. You're displacing them from their homes because there's all this new construction, and it's happening all the time, all over the city. Like, it's everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's fucking everywhere. And you don't have the proper, like, you know, nature's chain to kind of keep it level.
I would also add the slight nuance of more people using the subway, using public transportation and
trash.
Because a lot of people are literally, you know, scarfing down food as they get to their second job to pay rent for their shitty apartment. And so, you know, it's a lot of that going on as well. And what is concerning is that normally you would not see rats as comfortable around people.
Yeah, they're not even running away no more.
They're not. Yeah, there's not a level of, like, they're not scared. So clearly they're interacting or they have some contact with humans in a way. And yeah, also, too, and the other thing that I would add is, construction has always been a part of the city, but construction had usually been about renovating, and it was ground up, meaning from street level and up.
Right.
And now we have construction because they are literally digging holes into New York.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, going 3-4 levels deep.
Right.
For parking areas and for, you know, solid beams to be in these places. So the construction has been frequent, but it is massive. We talked about this with the traffic and how, like, there's basically a crane every two blocks.
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yes, yeah, I agree with all that. It's like, it's out of control. The other day I was on 175th Street Station, and somebody had put down, I don't know why they did this either, like, they put down, like, they just said, obviously I went to McDonald's, they had, like, a whole large fries and a cheeseburger, and they just put it, like, on the ground. Like, I walked away. I don't know why, and I'm like, man, this is about to be rat heaven right here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You said, it's like you see the food and shit everywhere, the trash. And then, I don't know, I might get a little trouble for this, but we also talk about, you know, these shelters closing and a lot more homeless people, which is obviously bringing, like, you know, a lot more kind of vermin because they're eating on the street.
Right.
Or they're eating everywhere and they're leaving shit or growing on the ground. And this is, yeah, it's crazy. But I think it was a tumor. Who I think we all know, who worked at Spotify for a long time. He's not working at YouTube.
Yeah.
He lives up in Harlem, so he takes a train every day. And he posted a video that he shot yesterday morning of him on the, I guess it was the D train, and it was a rat on the car.
So, like, on people, top of the car, or like
no, on in the car. Oh, in the shit. Car. Yeah,
like going to work. Like,
yes, he's going. It's like in the morning.
Yeah.
So it's a full car, and people are like standing on the seats. And, like,
wait, was that? Look, I saw that clip. That was Tuma's clip.
That was Tuma's clip.
Oh, okay.
That was Tuma's clip. Yeah. So, you know, so like people are jumping on the seats, and the rat is kind of running like up under the seats, and like, and then there was another clip a few days ago of a rat like on a pole. Looked like it might have been like the 6th train. Like this, man. It was this is crazy, man. So
yeah, I have yet to see. I have yet to actually see a rat on the train, and I'm good on that.
I'm actually so
in the subway, sure.
On the actual train, yeah. I'm actually surprised it doesn't happen more often.
I'm good with it not happening.
You know what I'm saying? I'm actually surprised. I mean, I don't want it to happen more often, but I'm actually kind of surprised that rats don't actually get on the actual car more.
I mean,
more often.
I think also too, we have to put in some perspective that people are now, they easily, readily have their phones available, right? So the footage that we see is much more frequent. Not that the rat population has just started doing this. Like, we just didn't see it necessarily. Like,
yeah, it wasn't filmed.
A lot of this has really changed after Pizza Rat. After Pizza Rat,
when the rat was
dragging the slice of pizza down the stairs,
the funniest
shit ever, the most New York shit ever. after that, you started to frequently, more and more frequently see this. And that's really what it is.
Yeah. So speaking of, I'm going to stay right with another New York City summer story, which was, I don't know if you saw this story about the crackdown on the ice cream trucks.
Yeah, I just saw that. Mass ass.
So the city has seized, I think it was 76 ice cream vans who had
committed. I think they were looking for 76. I think they only took, they only found 46. Like 30 something.
They took 46 and they sued 76. That's what right. Because these ice cream trucks, which are all around New York City, all throughout the summer, and like sometime, you know, pretty deep into the fall as well, have like amassed $4.5 million, you know, total between all the trucks in fines and tickets that they never paid, because apparently what the owners were doing was they had all these shell companies that they would set up. So then you'd get a ticket, like say several tickets through, you know, one company, and then when you went to they wouldn't pay the tickets, and then when they went to re-register the trucks the next season, they re-register the truck under another shell company. So it looked like the truck was had a clean record. And they've been doing this for years. It said between 2009 and 2017, they've been doing it. There's been over 22,000 summonses, which they have not paid, which is insane.
That's crazy.
I'm going to say this. Okay. First of all, a lot of these fucking fines are silly and arbitrary, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, until you guys go and deal with the fucking diplomats that owe $20 million and all
right,
that.
Right, right.
Like kiss my ass about these fucking trucks. Like, these guys, like, dude, nobody's getting rich off the fucking strawberry shortcakes that they sell.
Or the toasted almond. Yeah.
Now, they can't pay the fines, because, like, the fines could take a whole day of profit.
Well, and I don't want to make it seem like there's no funny business or there's no shady business. Look, anytime you're dealing with a business that their main operation is cash, there's always an element of shady shit and unscrupulous and nefarious individuals, right? Like, I get that. I'm not saying that that's not the case here. But, you know, fucking Leon and Juan and them, okay, they not living, you know, in 4,000 square feet over in Staten Island because they fucking selling toasted almonds.
Like, exactly.
Like, nobody's on 57th Street on the 19th floor.
Exactly, because they sold the bomb pops.
You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. The fucking prices ain't even changed in years.
They really haven't changed that much. You know what I'm saying?
Like, they not half these ice cream trucks don't even be ice cream trucks. It's a nigga with a van and a freezer that he got in the back, and he going down to Costco buying shit wholesale.
Going to BJ's.
So he might be clearing $75. On an off day, you know, maybe if he gets a spot in the village somewhere, you know what I'm saying?
Might get 100.
Yeah. He cleans up. Come on, man.
Yeah, cut some people at lunch.
Yeah, come on, man.
And they said a lot of the fines were, of course, in Midtown between 34th and 59th Street, because, like, you know, a lot of the trucks parked there during the day, you know, catching the people coming in and out the office buildings and da-da-da-da.
Because, and here's another little dirty little secret, is that a lot of your delivery services have deals with the city, dude. When FedEx and UPS, when they get those tickets, they're not paying those tickets full free.
Okay?
Really?
Okay.
Nah, dude, I work for FedEx. That shit ain't nothing but a little light paperwork.
Interesting.
And listen, it is also fair, and I'm not saying that in a disparaging way, because that is how the city runs. That's how the city moves. You cannot, you know what I'm saying? So there is... The one thing you were always told as a delivery person, there were two places you don't fuck with: bus stops and fire hydrants. Those are non-negotiable.
Okay. Those are no go.
Handicap, obviously, but anything hydrant, anything bus stop, that's you got to deal with that. Like, you might get written up. Like, you get in trouble for that. But like a double parking, that's the cost of doing business in New York City. So you pay a certain portion of that, you know what I'm saying, to the city. It's not like it's free or anything like that, but there is a level of it being the cost of doing business. You know what I'm saying? If a truck has, a truck might have 400 pieces of freight in there between envelopes and packages. So
absolutely,
he got $120 in tickets today. Big fucking deal. Like,
yo, I'm gonna ask you a question. Since you used to work at FedEx, you might know the answer. Sometimes you see the FedEx truck or the UPS truck or even the post office truck, and they'll have the ticket on the window, and they'll leave it the ticket on the window. Is that to deter from getting another ticket?
It is. Well, two things. One, you don't want to lose it. You don't want to move it.
You just leave it there.
You just leave it there because it's there.
It's like a ticket holder.
And also what it does is it signifies, because usually what happens in New York is that person that's writing your ticket is circling your block. So they might have
the area,
they might have one square block. So you might be on, say you're on 8th Avenue and 34th Street. Well, you might be on 7th Avenue and 35th Street. That's the same ticket person's corner.
Same guy, yo, right? Girl.
So, you leave the ticket there as also an acknowledgement to them that they've already written you a ticket. It's really, it's not a contentious relationship at all. They kind of come over and say, you know, you get to know those people on your route. You know?
Yeah, because you're there every day. You're there 5 days a week. Exactly. Yeah,
it's not a contentious relationship at all. They'll just say, yo, I'm hitting you up right here. Boom, I'm leaving. Yeah. You know, you just leave it in the window.
Yeah, it's the end of the month. You know what I got to do? What I got to do. You know what I'm saying?
They're definitely going to do that, but that's par for the course.
Okay, that was the tickets and rap portion of the podcast.
That was very New York City.
That was wild New York City. You know what I'm saying? We're just giving y'all a little extra energy, you know what I'm saying, for the people who don't know how it is to live here in the city. I wanted to mention let's keep it lighter before we go. Well, Fix My Life was kind of crazy. Let's keep it a little lighter. So I'm going to start with my last weekend. And then you can do yours. So last Thursday, I've had kind of a pretty hectic week. So last Thursday, I got to give a shout out to the piece of shit, Lenny the Barber. I went to his 50th birthday party out in New Jersey. Really nice, kind of intimate crowd, maybe like 100 people or so. You know, everybody telling stories about what a terrible nigga Lenny is.
It looked like you were heckling Lenny from your seat.
I had to. Because Lenny's a piece of shit.
That's his birthday.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, everybody was heckling Lenny.
Okay.
He's a terrible nigga. You know what I'm saying? We love him, but he's a horrible nigga. So, that was, and I said that because I had to post that because, like, me, that was the first time Lenny has ever publicly acknowledged that I was the person who put him on, period.
But put him on how? You said this before, how?
I gave him, okay, so I met Lenny, Jesus, this is too long ago to remember, probably like 92.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Lenny the Barber is an actual barber, but he became better known in the industry because he used to throw these bomb-ass parties.
Yeah, these club, these parties. He became a club promoter, and now he does concerts and stuff. Yeah. But he still has that nickname. So I met Lenny in like 92 when I first moved over to in Harlem to Riverside, and he was cutting at a barbershop that's no longer there. It's called Sam Gore, which is a very popular barbershop in the 80s, 70s and 80s. It's owned by a man named Sam Gore. We ended up moving back down south, as they all usually do. So I met Lenny then. So, like, you know, I was working at Jive. So, Lenny was telling me he wanted to kind of try to expand his thing because, you know, he was cutting cats in the city. So I put him on, and he cut I was working with Shaquille O'Neal, and he cut Shaq. And that was his first kind of entree into cutting, you know, athletes and rappers and da-da-da-da. Like, he cut Shaq. Then I got him to start cutting KRS-One. Okay. Then I got him to... He started cutting Pimp C. Pimp C and then Bun come to New York. They come up to the shop. Too Short. Like, they don't. And then he kind of obviously expanded out from there. So that was always our running beef because it was like, I put you on, and then Lenny got real popular. And then, of course, now I'm sitting in the barbershop, and he's telling me, I got nine. And I'm like, I'm like, nigga, are you serious right now? Like, I'm not saying I should go next, but goddamn. You know what I'm saying? You know? So that was just been our running beef for like literally, what's that, almost 30 years, you know what I'm right. saying? You know, it's a fun, beef. You're not
worth it. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why I was heckling his ass. But anyway, so that was really nice. Actually, when me and Rabia went.
Yeah, I heard her in the background.
Yeah, Rabia and Susan. I don't know Susan. So we had a good time. Yeah, and then Saturday, I went to the Vuv Pico Polo Classic out in Liberty State Park in Jersey City, New Jersey, which was really nice. It's like way I never had been before. I've seen pictures of it because they do one here. They do one in L.A. too. I think only New York and L.A. I think they're the only two places that they do it. Might be others, but those are the two I know of, I should say. And it's interesting because, you know, I don't know how long ago this event's been going on, but for quite a while. And when it first started, it was a very, of course, white event, like a very white kind of town and country.
Yeah. Vanity Fair. I mean, it's a polo match, obviously.
It's a polo match, exactly. So it would be a white event, like, you know, with the young whites and the old white money coming there wearing their duds and watching a polo match. And then, you know, I guess a few black people found out about it because you can buy tickets on the on the site. It's not like you can't get a ticket for it. And we were talking to the security guard who worked at, because you take a ferry from Liberty City, Liberty State Park, back to Lower Manhattan. And we got off the ferry, there was a security guard there. And he was like, yo, I've been, you know, he said, I always work this day on purpose because I love to see our people coming off the boat, like looking amazing. You know, all this love is in the air, everybody's chilling. And he's like, yeah, I remember it was used to be all white. And then it was a sprinkle of us. It was a few of us. And over time, of course, as we do, we've taken it over. So now it's probably 90% black.
Is it that much? Is it 90%? I figured that blacks were just posting more than the white people.
No, it's us. It is us.
Yeah, because the white people was like, fuck this.
Yeah. There's a few of them, and I think that most of them are there. They're in the VIP section. You know, the different ticket tiers. So obviously the VIP section is way more pricey.
Because we go over there and do everything but watch the match.
Niggas watch the match. For a little bit, though. We watched it for a little bit. Like
Niggas is laying in the middle of bottle circles.
I know. Yeah, we doing that. We doing that, too. But when the match started, a lot of us did go. Because you can watch it wherever you are. It's like this is a fence around us so the horses can't run out. But you could see it. So, like, a bunch of us did go over there for, like, the first, I forget what they're called. They're not called quarters, but whatever. It's like four kind of segments. We did watch a lot of the first segment, and the boy from Pose, who plays the kid who was a dancer, the one, you know what I'm talking about, the character?
Yeah.
He sung the national anthem.
Okay.
So we watched him, and then we watched a little bit of the match, of course, like you said, then niggas started trickling off and taking more pictures.
Right.
It's a huge Instagram event.
That's what it is. You go to
Instagram should really be out there sponsoring this event.
Yeah.
Because the traffic that they're getting that day is unreal. But it was very nice. It was like a very nice event. Everybody's like having a great time. You know, everybody's dressed, you know, to the nines, and people are like showing each other love. Like, hey, yo, bro, yo, your suit is popping. Like, let me take a picture. Like, it's like
it's a fashion. You know, it's a fashion show.
It's totally a fashion show, and we are out there. But I mean, I honestly, like I say, like we should go next year. Like we'll have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We'll have a really good time. The weather happened to be great that day, so that helped. So that was really nice too. And you know, you get out of there, it ends at 6,
right?
So you out, and you know, you ain't like out of there all night. You know what I'm saying? Like you can still get home at a really decent hour. And, you know, you get, you know, if you want to, you know, do something later on, you could. If not, like, you've had a full day. You know what I'm saying?
Right, so right.
I really enjoyed it a lot. And then 2 days ago, Tuesday, my man Sean C. And Riggs, both A&R cats. Sean is also a super foodie. He set up for us to have dinner cooked for us by this cat named Eduardo Vernado, who was a huge, is a major chef in a chef for a young black cat, 39 years old. He's based out in Seattle, but he comes to New York sometime because his mentor is this guy named Jonathan Benno, who has a restaurant called Benno's down in the Evelyn Hotel on 27th Street. Okay. So like he cooked his food for us, everything off menu. Like they were just bringing shit out, and we're drinking wine and we're talking, and it was like, it was almost a real like fly New York shit. I really enjoyed that. I had a good time doing that. And then yesterday, Naima and I were invited by Marcus Samuelson, who owns the Red Rooster, to come over there to have lunch and talk about some business stuff, which we'll inform you listeners about a little later. But we sat with him for what, almost 2 hours probably?
Yeah, almost
2 hours. 2 hours, you know what I'm saying? I think that was that off menu when he served us too?
I have no idea. I just know he was like, bring some jerk.
Yeah. Some jerk. Yeah. And so was that lamb or goat? Lamb and chicken.
Lamb, I think. No, goat. Yeah. It was goat, right? Goat and chicken.
Yeah. Curry goat with banging. Rice and like banging. And we had,
I was just eating some chicken just now.
Yeah. So I've had a pretty like cool week so far. And, you know, a lot of kind of cultural shit. I might even hit the club tomorrow night because I'm kind of antsy.
Nice. Maybe some ratchet shit. What club? What club do you even go to?
Well, not even a club. It's a party. It's a party called We Like the Party. That's the name of the party. We Like the Party. It's this young DJ named DJ Mike Nasty. And you know Philip, who works at Pharrell?
No.
You know if you see him. Trust me, you know if you see him.
Okay.
He did all the BBC stuff with Pharrell. You know if you see him. Well, okay. He's one of the promoters of the party. So it's kind of like a young, cool thing. I'm just going to go down there and just check the energy. You know what I'm saying? See what it's like. But, yeah, but I know I wanted you to also talk, Nye, about the
Roots Picnic.
The Roots Picnic, yeah.
So I went to the Roots Picnic for the first time. One thing y'all probably can guess about me, I don't really fuck with festivals. Like, I do Essence because it's inside, and I have a seat, and it's air-conditioned, and it's not in the sun. But the shit where you gotta be outside all day and on a lawn and on some, I'm not really with that. But it was the Roots. I wanted to go. Greg wanted to go. And we really like Philly. I enjoy Philly. It's chill.
It's a good Philly, especially in the summer.
Yeah. So we went down on Friday. Stayed in a really cute spot called the AKA something. They're set up more like apartments, and they're right near UPenn, and you have like great views and all this other stuff. So the picnic was in a new location. First, I want to shout out Tina Ferris and Tina Ferris Tours. Tina Ferris is the Roots tour manager, and she also now I think does what's the girl? What's the Shea Butter Baby's name? Girl's name. No, what's her name? Ari Lennox.
Oh, Ari Lennox. Oh,
okay. Ari Lennox. Her album is literally Shea Butter Baby. Ari Lennox. She does, I think, Six Black, however you say his name. And she does the internet. She does a few other people, but she started out as the Roots tour manager. But she just got like this big grant from Live Nation for this new initiative they're doing for women owned businesses in the industry, so I just wanted to shout her out. But anyway, she is the person who puts together the Roots Picnic for the Roots. But it was their first time in Fairmont Park, which is like the famous Philly park.
Mm-hmm. Their version of Central Park.
Mm-hmm. Logistically, it wasn't great. The entry, the wayfinding to the entry was difficult. Because like with any other park, if you don't know the park, you don't know. You have no idea where you're going. And they had a map, but the map showed icons based on like a Google view of the park. But there was no identifying like cross.
Like you are here type shit.
Yeah, but there was also no like when we were getting there, we were trying to figure out like, okay, well, where are we on this avenue in relation to where we need to be in the park? Like there was no real clear or anything like that. So we got inside. Finding VIP check-in took a minute. Like somebody sent us in a whole circle around the park. Then once you checked in at VIP, you got conflicting information about which entrance you could go into. There was a VIP entrance that was for people who bought VIP tickets through Live Nation.
Mm-hmm. When
you checked in at Will Call VIP as like an artist guest or something, they were telling you you had to stand in the actual entry line. And y'all, that shit was like,
crazy.
Everybody came like right at 2 o'clock. It started at 12, but everybody got there like right around 2. The line itself was like 20 minutes long, and it was hot as fuck. Like the sun's at the top is as hot as hell. Greg was almost like, we're gonna go back to the room for 2 hours. And I was like, no, let's just figure it out. And we ended up finding like another line and getting in. And then the wayfinding in the park, the park's not big, but it's set up kind of interesting. There's a lower level, and then there's an upper level, and it's like tiers to it. So it was kind of hard at first to navigate your way through the park to find where you needed to go. Now the lineup though was dope. On the main stage, They had Ari Lennox. They had 21 Savage. And I think a fight broke out during his set. I wasn't there for that. they had her. They had, I'm missing some people. They had City Girls or City Girl.
Yeah.
And then obviously the Roots closed out on the main stage. On the second stage, they had Queen Naija. They had, and I'm missing some of the earlier acts, but also, they had Lil Baby was on one of the stages. I can't remember which one.
Okay.
They had Black Thought and Mos Def, Yasiin. They did a mixtape together a while ago. They did the mixtape live, which was dope. I realized I'd never seen Mos live, and he's ill live. Like,
I don't know if I've ever seen him live either.
Did we lose now?
I don't know what happened.
And then they did a set with Rafael Sadiq and a bunch of artists who were part of the Soulquarian Collective.
How was Ray?
He was cool. I don't think Ray rehearsed with them. And also, you know, Raphael's used to be in his own MD, and Quest was MDing this.
Mm.
I think that he didn't rehearse with them because the songs where they kept everything the same, he was in his pocket. The songs where they like flipped the melody and like went off on kind of like some jam session shit, he felt a little off.
Okay.
But one of the highlights for me was, I love Raphael, but my favorite Tony songs are led by Dwayne. And Fonte came out and did Whatever You Want.
He did Dwayne's parts? Okay.
He did Dwayne's parts, so I thought that was dope. And who else? I think Bilal came out during Raphael's set. And then we went, I think that was the last set on the secondary stages. And then there was a podcast stage, like Joe Budden did his joint. The Reed did their joint. The Originals, which is D-Nice, Stretch Armstrong, Clark Kent. Who else is in the original?
Rich Medina.
They did an early set. I missed it.
And Tony Touch.
They did an early set. I missed it. And then the Roots closed it out. So the Roots were doing the 20th anniversary of Things Fall Apart, which is cool. It's not my favorite Roots album, but it's cool. But then, obviously, where they had opportunities to bring in other people, they did. So they brought Common out to do a couple of joints from Water for Chocolate, and that's the one with the light on it, right? Yeah, whichever.
Yeah.
He did a couple of joints for like Water for Chocolate. They brought Mos back out because Mos is on Things Fall Apart, but Mos also did Umi Says, which was fucking awesome. Jill, obviously, and they also brought out, which I thought was interesting, Beanie Siegel and Freeway.
Okay, also Philly shit. I get it.
I didn't know Beans had lost his voice.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Not as bad as DMC, but he can't rap. Apparently got shot or something. I don't know. But anyway, he can't rap.
He got shot in his arm or some shit like that, but I think it like went through. He got fucked up. When he got shot this last time, it wasn't like some in and out, I'm back out here shit.
Right. So his voice, he can rap, you can hear him, but he can't, like, he has to have a hype man. He has, because you can't hear him, you know?
Can't hear him, yeah.
Especially compared to Free, because Free's still like, Free's still full, whatever. But it was dope. It was dope to have him there, and they did What We Do, and they did Rock the Mic, and they did a couple of other joints. And then they even brought out the Young Guns, who I don't know how that happened. But they did that little Can't Stop, Won't Stop, Rockefeller Records, because we get down and we get down. You remember that song? Girls and Girls. They love that was a little bop. And then I think that was it. So it was cool. The park was a mess by the time we left. There were not enough trash cans. Again, just the logistics could have been tighter, but I had a good experience. I don't know if I would ever go out there for that many hours again, ever.
That's what turns me off about festivals, like to be out there for like hours on end.
Yeah.
It's just a lot. Even if you do get, fortunately get a VIP thing and be backstage, that's better.
Right.
Because there's places to sit and there's water and food. But even still, it's just like, it's a long ass day. And obviously they're usually in the summer.
Right.
So more than likely it's really hot. You know what I'm saying? This is like, it's a long time to be like in one place for 8 or 9, 10 hours, sometimes even longer.
And I will say though, like the Roots have a what they call the compound, and like it's like way back behind the stage, and it's not just like a backstage area; it's like a whole little trailer park area. But these niggas got like they had crab legs and ribs and sweet potato pie and a bunch of picnic table. Like the food was banging. They had a little arcade back there, and they had an arcade on the grounds too. They had stuff for like everybody of every age, which I appreciated. But they had an arcade back there. So like, if you didn't want to see the shows and just wanted to chill until it was time for you to see something and you had that level of access, you could go back there. And like, that's where all the quote unquote cool kids were, you know?
Would you go back? Would you do it again?
Yeah, I'll go back, but I'm not going back for the whole day. Hell no.
Not for the whole day. Okay.
I won't go back for the whole day. I'll go back for like whatever the last two acts are of the night or something like that. Yeah. I'll do that. Like, I'm just not built to be outside all day like that. I'm just not. What I did want to shout out is yesterday after I left you, I went to a screening, as we're talking about gentrification, I went to a screening of this movie that comes out this weekend. It's called The Last Black Man of San Francisco. It's hard to describe what it's about, but on the surface, it's about gentrification. It's about a dude whose family loses their house, had lost their house some time ago on this really expensive like street near the Golden Gate Bridge, and he becomes kind of obsessed with the house. And him and his friend are trying to like figure out how they can get the house back. But that's the surface. It's really kind of deeper than that. But it's beautifully shot. Like,
is it a documentary or is it an actual film?
It's a film.
Okay.
But it's beautifully shot, really well scored. And the filmmaker is a first-time filmmaker. Even the actor, Jimmy Fails, isn't really well-known. But it's also got Danny Glover in it. It's got Tashina Arnold in it. Mike Epps has a small role in it. But everybody is just really dope. And it's just it's a full 2 hours long, but it's a beautiful film. I feel like it's going to be talked about kind of as this year's like Moonlight or If Beale Street Could Talk. I feel like it's going to fall
back. One of those kind of small ones that kind of catches a little wave.
Yeah. And it's just a new black story that hasn't been told in this way. And I think, you know, as a New Yorker, especially, I could resonate with it because my biggest fear is that my family loses our house in Harlem to taxes or something and we're never able to.
Yeah, exactly. So,
like, it was almost like a little too close to home.
Okay. All right, cool. We'll keep an eye out for it. Real quick, I also want to give a shout out to Brooke because I went to his crib for the cookout Memorial Day, and he definitely burned some food. We talked about the food?
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Oh, yeah, because I bought you. How'd you like your plate, by the way?
My plate was excellent. Thank you, Sean. Okay.
You're welcome.
Of course. Yeah, salmon was popping. I forgot we talked about it, but, you know.
Yeah.
I felt good because Marcus
is on the grill, if y'all didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, bro, nice on the grill.
I don't be wearing them funny-ass uncle shoes, nigga. Like,
yeah, or the goofy-ass chef hat.
That's from real, real old nigga. Because I'm a young old nigga, so I got my Air Max on and my joggers and my dad cap.
word. Yeah, he ain't on there. We'll talk about the Kiss the Chef and all that old dumb shit. I wanted to mention Kamala Harris being is attacked the right word?
No, she wasn't attacked.
I don't know. Attack is the right word.
Accosted at best.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I know you were talking about this on Twitter, bro. I know you had some thoughts on this, especially from a security standpoint and all that. So, you know, you want to run with it a little bit, you can.
So this, I guess it was last week, at some point, there was an organization that had Kamala Harris, the presidential candidate, was up there on the stage. She was speaking. She literally had a mic in her hand. Mm-hmm. And some guy decided to make some level of a political statement and basically rushed the stage, snatching the mic out of her hand. And started to talk. I mean, you couldn't really make out what he said, but he was boarded off the stage.
Yeah, and peace to what was her name? Saint Pierre. Why am I blanking on her name? Who jumped in between them?
Yes, definitely want to say peace to that woman because her initial instinct was to what's happening here?
Yeah.
And, you can tell that the senator was definitely shaken a little bit. Mm-hmm. She didn't mm-hmm. quite know what that is and what was happening. She didn't seem scared as much as she seemed surprised and shocked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sure. Very caught off guard.
Caught off guard. She didn't flinch or anything like that. You can almost see the wheels turning as she knows that their camera's rolling and how she reacts and what it, you know, the next steps for her are going to be indicative of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to talk about the security, more specifically her detail.
That's my thing. Like, you're a fucking presidential candidate. How did that even happen?
Well, there are a couple things. One, she's not, from what I understand, from what I read, she is not at the point where she's able to have...
No, she won't have Secret Service
Secret
yet.
Service,
That'll
Secret
come if she wins the primary.
Yeah, Obama apparently had it when he ran.
He had it very
early. He had so many death threats.
Yes, he had it very early. So it is not unprecedented for them to give very high profile and early candidates a level of Secret Service protection. But she is a sitting senator. So yes. I was very curious as to who was on her detail. If I'm not mistaken, I believe Capitol Police. Go with them places. I mean, listen, everyone on that level has a security detail. What level their security detail is a whole other discussion, but mm-hmm. everyone has a security detail.
Right.
I mean, you know, so that's not uncommon. Even if she didn't have one that was assigned to her based on her government position, she is a presidential candidate with a campaign that is funded. Okay. They are not, you know, they are not raising money at a fucking bake sale.
They ain't selling dinners.
they ain't selling, you know, fried fish dinners, okay? They have money, and her safety is obviously paramount, and they have more than enough funds to cover adequate, competent people who have done this in this space.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that as a person who has done security, I thought that they were really slow to react.
Really slow. Like, he was on that stage. Her name is Corinne Jean-Pierre, okay. by the way.
Yeah, they were all kind of like,
they were on stage. He was on stage for a minute. Like, yes. And then Corinne protected her, and then there was another woman who kind of started to kind of grab the mic a little bit, but she was small. She was fearful, but she wasn't aggressive. But it took a minute for like a couple of men to get on the stage. Including her husband probably came up there.
And one of the things that tells me is that is you, when you see such a late reaction, that is usually due to poor positioning. Mm. I don't know how many people are on her detail.
Oh, God, you mean they were too far away to get there easily?
They were either too far away or they were in a place where they could not see what was happening. Either way, that is, it's poor positioning, right? Like, there's really... not an excuse for that. And, you know, luckily this did not turn into a dangerous situation. But if this was a dangerous situation, that man had more than enough time to do severe bodily harm.
Yeah, wild time.
Now, this is also something I actually had somebody who, you know, based on their Twitter profiles, said that they were, you know, a security professional, that this is what they do. That they were consultants, and they said that they were at that particular venue, and that basically they had what we would call like fly by night security guys, you know, Mr. Earl.
Picking up a few extra hours.
Mr. Earl got the gout shoes on.
Exactly.
Key ring on his hip, you know, God bless him. Basically the guy was saying that they did not have adequate event security. And what most people were saying was, well, you know, that's really on the event. And I would say that is incorrect. Mm. When you are paying for professionals to handle your safety, they are the alpha and the omega. They are the beginning and the end of your safety. That is it. There is nobody else's excuse. There's no one else's responsibility to contain, control, and make sure that their asset is straight. There is no world in which anyone is going to not hold Julius accountable if something happens
to Beyonce. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no world. Everyone, And I can tell you this from experience. As a person that comes in, the first thing you normally do is you meet with the head of their security team. Who is the point person that is there? You normally do a walkthrough. Okay, depending on how many people she has with her, she might have a body person, she might have a driver, she might have, you know, I don't know what her setup is. And again, that can all be dependent on the environment that you're going into.
Yeah,
the level
of
security that you might want to have for a one-off event in DC is probably going to be not the same if you're going to somewhere to a rally in Mississippi, right?
Like, yeah, real talk.
Like, you have different, you know, levels of protocol here. So I say all that to say that, I say this as a professional that has had, it's very easy for people to be Monday morning quarterbacks. And sometimes,
of course, I would have did was.
Sometimes you have those mishaps, but those are mishaps that cannot happen with someone who is a presidential candidate, right? Like, you cannot be so out of position. There's several ways that they could have done this. And like I said, normally when you come in and you have your discussions with the point person, ideally you do things like, if you don't want to set up a barrier, right? Because you're also dealing with image issues, right? Like, you don't want it to, you don't want her to be perceived as though she's being barricaded off.
Yeah, scared to be for people, yeah.
So what you do is you basically put your plainclothes guys in the front.
Yeah.
You save one or two seats. Like, dude, you on stage left, you on stage right. Okay, yeah. Facing that way.
Keep a head on a swivel.
Like, this is, like, there's so many different ways. But also, as a candidate, I understand that sometimes your schedule does not allow you to be able to have that level of walkthrough. It might be time for them to hire a consultant that does, a pre-run. You know, this is what the setup is. These are the point people. This is what you need to do. Here's your exits. Here's your entrances. Do you have a full-time driver? Driver, you keep this motherfucker parked and gassed and ready to pull out when we need to. Don't have nobody blocking you in. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those sorts of things. So I'm glad she's okay. It's definitely worthy of a meeting.
Definitely.
I would not. It'd be unfair for me to say who should or shouldn't be fired. But if somebody got fired, I wouldn't be shocked.
You'd be like, well, yeah, you know.
Or if somebody got demoted, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
But, right. That's what happened.
I also, a lot of us were talking about how much of a safety and security breach that was for Kamala. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there who are kind of like, what's the big deal? The dude just wanted to talk and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Which again proves that there's just such a lack of awareness of how much realer shit can be for him. Mm-hmm. And for Kamala, not just, that could come from both sides, because there's a whole bunch of niggas out there who don't like her either. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
So it's, but I think to Sean's point, it was really lax, and dude himself would probably be like, my right to free speech, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But it should never be that easy. And wasn't that a women's conference?
Yes.
Like, in general,
yes.
It should never be that easy.
And the fact that he was not charged, look, I understand that that's a very difficult thing. You know, obviously charging him is going to be, more or less used as a deterrent for people to not do that sort of stuff. But it also presents it, it also gives him another microphone in his face. It also gives him access to, media outlets. And, what does it prove, right? Like, what are you going to do? You could charge the guy. He gets, remanded for, he gets 90 days probation.
$200 fine or some shit.
We're not talking about nothing serious happened. And, it's also very interesting because I've always, and even when I was out, one of the things you have to learn as a person that's done security, bodyguard, and been a body person, like a point person, is there is a split second of differential between exciting and harmful. And you have to make that call, right? There is somebody, screaming because they're just simply excited. There is somebody screaming because they are coming to do harm. you just can't be that far away. Like, you just can't. And this is a part two of why you will see people dressed for the occasion, right? When you see Mark Zuckerberg going out for a jog, okay, he's not being tailed by a fucking Sprinter van with emergency service unit equipped guys and sniper rifles. No, he's going to have guys that are jogging, guys that are going to be like sized, right? Like, these are not going to be like these big behemoth, you know, these big, you know, 6'9", 500.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they're not going to look like that, because you don't want to give off the image that that is what they are there for, right? Like, that's, you know, but you want them to sort of blend in and fit in. And that's kind of the point here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a long time ago, so a lot of people who listen might not know this, but Bobby Kennedy, who was John F. Kennedy's brother, who was running for president in 68, like, this is how he got killed. He was at a rally,
right,
and the guy, Sirhan Sirhan, came up on him, and everybody was excited. He had, like, his people around him, like Rosie Greer, who was a football player at the time, and, you know, because he was a very popular candidate, so he had, like, a lot of celebrity pull. Like, all these people were around him, and this guy, Sirhan Sirhan, came up on him, and everybody thought it was sweet. It's like this, like, oh, he just wants to say hi to Bobby Kennedy, and
right,
Bobby Kennedy got shot, and he's dead.
Yeah.
And died. So yeah. So like Naima said, like, you know, shit is very real out here, especially in this day and time. And it's funny because, well, not funny, but I saw another clip of Kamala a couple of weeks ago. She was in an airport, and a woman asked to take a picture with her, and she was like, "Of course, sure." And then this other woman came up on her and started, like, berating her about something. I forget which. It was like a law or something, or maybe abortion, something, whatever. She just started going at her crazy. And Kamala was like, okay, hold on. Let me take this picture first.
Right.
I'm in the middle of taking this picture, then I'll get to you. And the woman was just like, nah. And again, there was no security detail there at all, because
the only reason
the woman kind of got pushed away a bit was other women at the terminal coming up to her and being like, yo, what the fuck is you doing?
Right.
So, like, at that point, she didn't even have any, she was just at the airport.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm sure since that and between that and this, you know, things will change. And she'll have to have some type of security around her, because for some reason, it seems like she's kind of getting singled out for people to kind of run up on her.
Which is
scary and dangerous. Also want to mention real quick, so it came out in the news, I think it was yesterday or the day before, whatever, that Paul Manafort is headed to Rikers, where he'll be in solitary. Yeah, I'm sure he's, like, there now, where he'll be in solitary, until he gets arraigned on some new charges. So it was a whole kind of thing, like, you know, people can't believe that this dude is going to Rikers, and you know, of course, there were some people kind of saying, well, that's why we need to close Rikers. They're bringing that shit back up again. But I just, you know, this is kind of wild to me, like, the fall this guy has had from, what, 2 to 3 years ago, where he's wearing $5,000 suits. And,
well, that's the problem. You know, he tried to do too much. Listen, you fly too close to the sun.
And his man left him hanging. Like, nigga, like, you're in Rikers and I'm in London, and good luck with all that. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Yeah, peace to all the other cast. FBI.
FBI. I mean, dude, nothing's gonna happen to Paul Manafort on Rikers Island.
It'll just be very uncomfortable.
I mean, it's going to be as comfortable as he's basically staying in whatever the Four Seasons wing of Rikers is.
That's what he's going to be at.
They're going to make sure that they don't have no issues with him in Rikers Island, dude. Now, if his name was Daquan Jenkins,
he'd be fucked.
Whatever.
Real quick, so Anthony Joshua, who was the heavyweight champion of the world based out of London, lost his belt this past weekend to a overweight Mexican heavyweight from California named Andy Ruiz. Knocked him out, dropped him 4 times. Unbelievable, man. Like, I don't know. What you think, bro? You think Joshua gonna try to get a rematch, or you think he's kind of done?
Well, no, he should definitely get a rematch. I mean, he did put Andy down. I mean, the knockout was in the 7th round, so it wasn't like it was like, you know, a squared up, boom. He just, you know, dropped and nobody thought anything of it. I mean, listen, the reality is that these are heavyweights, man, and they fucking hit hard. That's why they're heavyweights.
Yeah.
Okay? And he's a pro. Like, dude's a pro now. He got like 33 wins.
Yeah.
Now, the competition that he got those 33 wins on, I'm not as savvy enough a boxing fan to say, you know, what that is. But I'm going to just say this. Okay. I'm happy for the dude, but he's going to get these, fat boy jokes. He's going to get these fat boy jokes. Okay? and what y'all not going to do is, I understand what people were trying to say was, oh, it's not, you know, Joshua looked pretty and all of that, and it's not about that. Like, I get it, dude. I understand. It's a heavyweight division. Everybody can knock everybody out. They all hit hard. I totally understand that. I also know what training and conditioning looks like. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I know what body types are. And don't fucking tell me that a 30-year-old heavyweight champion should look more soft and flabby than fucking 40-year-old George Foreman did when he came back. Like, dude, I know what out of shape is for a boxer, and I know what a dude that's just completely out of shape.
And that dude's out of shape.
I don't give a fuck what clips you show me, okay? I went to dude's IG, and I saw him. He basically took a year off of boxing. Now, I don't know if he had personal issues or whatever the case may be, but back in 2017, he was in much better shape. He did not look as soft and round as he does now.
Wow.
And I'm going to show you the IG. He does not look as soft and round as he does now. They were like, yo, he had a month to get ready for the fight. What you expect? Dude, he fought in April of this year.
So hopefully he's going to start getting in some better shape now, I hope.
Yeah. Listen, I hope that he gets all the money he can. He seems to have embraced, you know, dad body icon status. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, go out there, get all of the fucking endorsements you can from the little nasty cheeseburger places, get all that paper.
All that shit.
Get all the Snickers. Yep. All sign him up.
Yep.
Sign him up, take it all, because guess what, dude? You might get a two-year run out of this. If out of that two-year run, you could clear, you know, 8 to 10 million and really change your family's life. And I'm happy for him. Like, dude legitimately, you know, looked at his mom and was like, yo, we don't have to struggle no more.
Exactly.
That felt good to watch.
Yeah, we're going to be all right. We're going to be all right now, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, so peace to Andrew Ruiz. I want to mention this show that I watched on OWN, because I guess it's Saturday night after I got back from the polo match and just chilled. Well, Fixing My Life premiered Saturday night, which was the brothers of Kansas City that all just buck wild. There was a lot.
Yeah, and they left in the same space they were when they got there.
There's a lot going on with them, just like it was before, like you said. But there was a show that came on after it called To Have and To Hold. It's basically Love and Marriage Huntsville. It's basically
right, but it's in Charlotte, show, right?
But it's in Charlotte, exactly. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's honestly, it might even be the same. What's the producer's name, bro? The cat that
used to do Andy and Todd's partner.
Yeah, the gay cat. What I forget. It looks like it might be
Carlos King.
Carlos King. Yeah, it looks like he might have produced this too, because it's like even everything is very similar. So it's these three or four couples now? With Charlotte.
Oh, I didn't watch that.
Oh, you didn't watch it? Okay, I watched like three or four couples with Charlotte. All affluent, you know, in different ways with Charlotte. But obviously now they're giving us like the peek behind the curtain as to like a lot of the chinks in the armor and all that. But unlike Love and Marriage Huntsville, which to me started off pretty kind of like glam, 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 and then as the season went on, the chinks started showing up. They started showing the chinks in the armor on like the first episode. It was oh shit. Like, yeah, like one couple with guy's attorney, his wife is a judge. like they're separating because he's not really intern no more. Like another couple is basically kind of broke and fronting. Like shit is sweet. Like it's a lot going on, but it's gonna, you know, I'm gonna watch it because, you know, I'm an own watcher anyway, so I'm gonna watch it every week and I'll be reporting back. I don't know if y'all gonna check in, but I'm gonna watch it. I also watched this. Me and Sean watched this Ron Artest documentary, which is on Showtime. It's about an hour and a half long. It's about his life and his basketball life anyway, and like his struggles with mental illness and probably bipolarism as well, and kind of what he's doing now. And I had kind of forgotten like how much fuckery he did while he was in the league. Like, everybody just kind of thinks about the fight.
The mouse in the palace.
Yeah, which obviously is a huge thing, but like he did a lot of fuck, like he was doing a lot of dumb shit, like stuff that like in today's NBA he would be gone, like he wouldn't even be in the league. Like he kept getting second and third and fourth chances, like he would have probably been banned from the league for all the dumb shit he was doing. And it was interesting because they talked to a couple of his old teammates from Indiana, Jermaine O'Neal and Steven Jackson. And Jermaine O'Neal especially, yo, he hates Ron. Like, and don't even hold back. He's like, yeah, like that nigga's whack. Like that nigga's whack for fighting. Like, yeah, he hates him. He's like, it was stuff that Ron did previous to the fight. It was the fight in of itself. It was the stuff Ron did after the fight. He was mad that Ron went to the Lakers and won a chip. Like he hates Ron, man. Like he really. It was interesting how much like animosity he still holds towards him. What did you think about it, bro?
I thought it was okay.
It was all right.
I thought it was an attempt at, really it was an attempt at a fluff piece.
Yeah.
It also sort of registered to me that I think we're in the age of over documentaries. Mm. Like Ron's life as we know it in terms of being a pro is really documented. Like it's well documented.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about 10 years ago, dude. Like we're not talking about something that is so out of our consciousness that we needed a documentary to remind us. And there was nothing new that we understood.
Yeah.
All of the things that were said and touched on, we all knew.
Yeah.
We knew that Ron had, you know, we know what growing up in Queensbridge is like. We did not need a half hour of being told what growing up in the projects is like. I mean, I get it. You want to paint this picture, but like, we didn't need that.
Yeah.
It didn't really talk about his development as a player. It touched on it. It's like a half hour of this one topic, you know, 4 minutes of him between 14 and 21, which is like the most, which is like where most of your development occurs.
Formative years.
Yeah, as a young adult and as a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it was just interesting to sort of watch how this was cut and made. And I actually like Ron Artest. We all sort of knew that Ron had some some issues, to say the least. Like
he was a little touch.
Yeah, that everything was just not okay. And you know, look, man, he is a quintessential story of a dad, you know, pushing his kid, seeing the potential in his kid. And you know, what I also found very interesting was that they did not seem to have a loving relationship.
Who, him and his dad?
Yes.
Oh, at all?
Yes. And so I found that very, very interesting and very, very telling. His dad also looks to seem like he had had a stroke or something because he had a very difficult time talking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, look, man, Ron had a very good career in the NBA. But, you know, for them to just sort of give these, you know, I don't want to say blanket excuses because.
Yeah, but that's what it felt like. A lot of excuses.
It felt like a lot of justification.
Yeah, for his bullshit. Yeah.
And what I did not you know, what I don't want it to come off as is like, you know, not everyone that has these same traits and same upbringing as Ron has those same reactions. And so we have to be very careful and very mindful, because there are thousands of people that have those same issues that have learned to control their emotions and learned to control their behavior. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't just be slighted that because you have this, then this is how you, you know, behave until you get help.
Yeah, and you could always use it as a trump card, like, well, you know I'm bipolar, so that's why I fucking kicked your windows in.
Exactly.
Like, nah, fam. And that is definitely something that really irked me about the documentary. It was like, you know, like every time this nigga did some shit, it was like, well, you know, I was having an issue and I had to go see a therapist. And I mean, again, I'm not bipolar, so I'm speaking totally out of turn here because I don't know about that and how that makes you feel and anything, but like, some of the shit was just like, worry, my nigga, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
well, it sounds like, and I didn't see it, so I'm talking shit, but it sounds like that really long, protracted part showing how he grew up was meant to set him up as, like, the troubled soul.
Not even tried to set him up. That was literally the foundation of this was, we lived in a fucking terrible place during a terrible time. And, you know, they do this thing now where, you know, look, I don't want to make it seem like the 80s were just, you know, okay, and it was very Cosby Show-like. No, that's not what I'm saying. But every time we see New York, the 80s, and they go to this fucking file clip.
Of the buildings burnt out.
Right.
You know, kicking the doors in. And
yeah.
It's just like, yo, we get it, bro. Like, we get it. Like, we understand what was happening. I don't think that the era in which we're talking about needs to consistently be reiterated in such a way. Like, that documentary is really like, it's really could have been an hour.
Absolutely.
Could have been an hour easily. They did not really go to, you know, some of the people that they had talking on there. I mean, look, they're obvious, you know, that they're not going to have a very objective view.
Of
Ron. But, you know, look, God bless him. He got off some things off his chest that he wanted to get off his chest. And, you know, I wish him well.
Yeah, that was kind of like my issue, too, was kind of like some of the shit they were saying. And I kind of got why Jermaine O'Neal feels the way he feels, because he was basically like, and I'm sure there was a lot more shit that, you know, that is not on film that he saw, because obviously they played together for several years. And I think Jermaine was kind of like, yeah, a lot of this nigga shit, he was just a fuck nigga. Like, a lot of it was just, he was just a fuck nigga. Like, I'm not going to just let him, because he was bipolar. No, he was a fucking asshole. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's smashing cameras and, you know, fucking up practices and, you know what I'm saying? And they made a very good point, like, you know, what happened after the Mouse and the Palace, and he got suspended for those games, he called the white guy who he, you know, had the little scuffle with, who threw the bottle at him, and like I had a whole apology with him, and ended up going to take the guy out to eat. Now they developed this relationship, and Jermaine O'Neal was like, yo, like, he never called him. Steven Jackson was like, yo, once he got suspended, we never spoke to him again.
Wow.
Yeah, once he got suspended, he just bounced. So he's like, so you called the white guy who threw the shit at you that caused us to lose a whole season and possibly a chance at the championship because they had a great team, but you won't call your teammates.
The guys, like, who were in the stands fighting.
Guys who's in there fighting for you. Yeah, Jermaine and Stevens particularly were actually fighting for him. And he's like, you never called us to say nothing. So, like, a lot of shit Ron was doing was just some fuck nigga shit to me, man. You know? Yeah, it was all, but like it was, you said, but Sean said, it was interesting how they were trying to spin it as to like, oh, he's this champion for mental health. And then God bless if he's doing things. I'm not saying he's not, but just like, come on, fam. Like, some of that shit was just like, man, he was just a jerk. You know what I'm saying? He's a fucking jerk, man. Just own it. Also wanted to talk about, I had a thing, man. I want to talk a little bit of, no, it's not bad. A little bit of politics, right?
Okay.
So, I want, I've been, you know, obviously the election, well, election's still a year away, and, you know, your man's on some fuckery, right? And he got 28. How many candidates now for the Democrats? About 24, 25 now? Something like that, and, you know, it's crazy. And so I've been thinking, like, how would one of these candidates really kind of beat Trump, right? And so this is my theory, and I want to run this by y'all and see what y'all think. So I think one of the mistakes that a lot of the candidates are making is everybody's obviously focused on Russia. They focus on the Mueller report. They focus on Trump's kind of assholeness, for lack of a better term, and his just being a dunce, right? And just being a terrible motherfucker, right? But I feel like nobody's really focusing on his terrible presidency in and of itself.
I think they're, but they can't just be like, he's been an awful president. They're speaking to specific things he's done that are like policy, things he's put in place. Like right now we got there's, you know, more shit going on with the border crisis and the kids and the concentration camps. I think they're pointing out his specific policies and the effect that they've had, but you can't just be like, Trump's been a horrible president.
No. I mean, you got to get me more specific. But I think there's a lot of things that I just don't feel like, and maybe I'm tripping, maybe I'm not catching enough, but I feel like they're not calling him on enough, such as, like, how he's really fucked off the farmers, right? And how so many more plants have closed when he was promising people, you know, in the Midwest, all these jobs and factories are coming back. And obviously how the tax policies that he's implemented have fucked off so many middle and poor and lower class people, while, you know, the rich are getting all these huge tax rebates. Like in other words, you hear it, but it doesn't feel like it's focused enough.
Well, you know why? Because everybody who doesn't want to vote for Trump already knows Trump is a shit president. We're clear. They want to know what somebody's going to do to change it. So a complaint has been in the past that you can't just run on Trump being terrible. You have to run on what you're going to do to fix it, or what you're going to do differently, or what you're going to do that's better, because Trump's base, you're not going to change their mind if it's not already changed. And that's my problem with Bernie, is that he keeps wanting to go after Trump's base. The people who we need to convert are the people who are apathetic and don't want to vote at all because they don't think there's anybody out there who's really going to do anything. So I actually understand running more on, like, Elizabeth Warren, be like, this is a problem. This is a problem. Here's my solution. Like, Elizabeth Warren is walking the talk right now. Like, she's not just throwing out talking points. And granted, everything that she's suggesting, proposing may not be doable, but at least she's coming with action items. Like, here's what I propose to do. Here's the fucking bill I just put on the floor. I just introduced. I just whatever the fuck. Like, I think that that's great. And she, to me, is standing out right now because she is clearly like she won't go on Fox. She won't go on Fox. You know, she really is standing like in her shit and is cutting.
She got it, Meghan McCain.
Do I think she what?
Did you see when she got it, Meghan McCain?
Yeah, when she got it, Meghan McCain. But basically, she shut Meghan down because it was like.
That's what I mean.
Why the fuck would I do that? I said what I said. You know what I mean?
Why would I help them make money?
Yeah.
Like with their terrible policies, and like Meghan was just, you know, some dumb shit. Like, well, there are a lot of nice people over there, and there's a lot of nice. And I can reach them in other places besides going over there and let them use me to make paper and to say, oh, we had a Democratic candidate on there. And then in the next 5 minutes, here come Laura Ingraham or, you know, Tucker Carlson saying some heinous shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah.
Do you think
Elizabeth Warren is going to be able to make some inroads and become like a real viable candidate?
I don't know, because I think that there's still a lot of misogyny, even if people don't realize it. There are still a lot of people who are just inherently going to trust a man over a woman, period.
Absolutely.
They're going to listen to a man over a woman, period. And, you know, Elizabeth, she's talking that shit, but Elizabeth presents as like your favorite school teacher from elementary school. So it's hard to know if she's going to really, like, she doesn't, but, and this is the trick with, this is what is unfair about women running for office. People said Hillary wasn't warm enough, but Hillary got to be Secretary of State because Hillary looked like you believed Hillary could handle some shit. Elizabeth looks like she might bring you some cookies. And I feel like that might work against her. Like, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks. On the flip side, for me, the X factor in all of this is Biden. Even though people don't really want him in the race, he might be the person who can beat Trump. And at some point for us, it's going to come down to like, who can beat this motherfucker, you know? And, but I see a lot more people paying attention to Warren, but we still got a ways to go, you know?
I still see
a lot more people paying attention to Warren. She's consistent. You know, she's right now, would like to see more candidates moving like that.
Yo, it's kind of wild how your man Beto just fucking disappeared.
I mean, honestly, what we need is for these motherfuckers, we need to get some of these niggas out the Senate. Like,
and I don't think he really wanted to run.
Yeah.
I really don't think he
people
really
wanted to run. People are probably like, this is Tom.
They pushed him into it. I don't think he really wanted to run. And that's why, like, he's never seemed to be enthusiastic about, he was enthusiastic about running for the Senate, and obviously lost that, but I never felt like he was really enthusiastic about this presidential shit, which is why I think he took so long to say he was going to do it or not. And then he was just like, fuck it. Like, all right, I'll do it. But then the first time, shit got a little bit rocky. You never even see him.
Yeah. I mean,
good for the bottom line. You know what I'm saying? It puts you in front of millions of people. You have multiple news outlets that give you a ton of access, especially early on. You get to go out there and shake hands and kiss babies. And again, you know, if you don't become president or you don't even become a serious candidate, you can't buy that level of access. And now you can go and speak at a corporate function and get six figures. And now you can write a book with an advance that's going to be massive, and you can do all of these other things.
So why bother?
It's no skin off their back. That's why you see 22 people doing this, right? Like, you've never seen that before, because what it showed, and we've seen it with the president that we have now, is that they've quantified what that level of access cost them.
And how
it's free.
Yeah, exactly. It's just right over the internet, a couple news shows that get on MSNBC or whatever, and it's lit. What about, what do y'all think about, did we talk about de Blasio?
I just don't even know what the fuck, like, why? We don't even like you. Like, I can't even talk about him. We don't even fucking like him. Why are you running for president?
Why do you think he decided to try to run?
Somebody must have gotten his ear. Like, I don't know. De Blasio was just like, Bloomberg had issues connecting to the constituency, right? Like, people didn't feel like he was warm, and they didn't feel like he was relatable. But I feel like he got there in time. But De Blasio is like, he's aloof. He's an enemy of everybody. Like, he's an enemy of the press. He don't fuck with the police union. Like, there's nobody that this dude is good with in the city. So why do you think you're gonna be able to make inroads outside the city?
Do you know how difficult it is to be a fucking terrible cat? Like, do you know how much charisma you have to not have to not be a star in New York City?
Right.
Like, I mean that in general.
Right.
Like, there has not been a mayor that hasn't, like, he is not a nationally recognized mayor.
That's the thing. Like, I think he's the first mayor of New York who isn't like a national name. And maybe he's doing this to increase his national profile. But it's also like, my nigga, we got enough shit to do here. Like, you
he does not have a national presence in the way that the mayor of New York would have normally had it. Now usually those are governors that have those sort of national presence, but outside of like a few major cities, New York being one of them, you know, obviously New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Houston, you know, those really, really big cities. Those mayors are looked at and dealt with in a different way. He has no charisma. He has no ability to negotiate in a way that makes people feel like, okay, no one's happy, but, you know, he tried, right? Like, he just doesn't have an it factor at all, which is very surprising for a man that tall. Usually tall men have a very clear presence about themselves. And I've never seen someone shrink in the fashion that he does. He's just not a star. Like, you don't see him at any games. Like, dude, how the fuck are you never at a
Yankees game? Yeah, worry. He never had a Knick game or nothing.
You, like, nobody, like that's the thing about, you know, that's the thing about Blumbito, man. Blumbito, which, you know, he show up, you know he not staying.
Yeah,
nobody,
but he
thinks, nobody thinks fucking Blumbito is hanging out with, you know, with the Knicks or whatever.
Right, like, yeah.
Show
yeah.
your face, you shake some hands, you kiss some babies.
Yeah, like, this motherfucker is horribly antisocial. And, you know, like, even the places that he's going to kick this off. So, for South Carolina, to get to have his first event in South Carolina, he went to Orangeburg. And he took his wife with him. And, like, Orangeburg is the, like, largest concentration of Black voters in the state, I think. And Orangeburg is Black and country. Like, it's your aunt and them.
Really?
No, for real. Like, it's your aunt and them. It's like one Walmart. Okay. It's like two Piggly Wiggly. and South
Carolina. I love it.
South Carolina State it. And Claflin College are there, but there's no young Black people move to Columbia. You know what I mean? Like, if you grow up in Orangeburg, you leave. Like, Orangeburg is like a retirement town mostly, right? Mm. To start there, and it's also like, it's old school. So to start there for me was like, you know, and I'm sure having your wife there, having his wife with him, like, was intentional, right? Because usually you go to South Carolina, you're going to start like in Columbia or at least in Greenville or in Charleston, like one of the bigger cities. I don't know, bro.
Is his wife from down there, maybe? Is the family?
No, dude. Like, his God bless that lady, right? But, like, your wife doesn't even have a prep. Like, dude, like.
Yeah, like.
Like you've had several Broadway shows open. The mayor's wife is never even there. I'm just saying, like, there's a level of protocol that goes with having the office of being a mayor of a city
right.
of that caliber, and doing certain things come with that. If you can't do that for New York City, if you can't even make New Yorkers believe that, you know, you even give a fuck or you even have the wherewithal or you have the ability to accomplish anything, how the fuck are you gonna make somebody in Maine? How the fuck are you gonna swing somebody in the Midwest? Like, come on, man.
And also, he has to know, like, the likability aside, De Blasio has to. So his family is a hard sell. Period.
They're about to say, I ain't seen them kids in a long time.
I mean, they're grown, they're doing whatever. But like, to Sean's point, even his wife is like, she's like the hippie Black chick who hooked up with a white dude, and then it's like he decided to run for mayor. But she was like, all right, cool, but I'll be over here. You know what I mean? And I don't mean this. Yeah, he doesn't care. She's had some initiatives that she's done, but we knew more about fucking the chicks that Bloomberg was dating, like girlfriend, than we know about first lady, you know? So,
well, it's alleged girlfriends, but I'm gonna leave that alone.
Well, you know, Bloomberg was single.
Listen, man, Bloomberg kept that. He kept the fucking townhouse over in the 70s. He was like, fuck that Gracie Mansion. That's a guest house, motherfucker. I got 7,000 square feet on 72nd with some marble. You think I'm coming to live in this fucking slum?
So, and I mean, there's also the fact that, like, you know, she's famously gone on record before as having said that she, you know, is bisexual or was bisexual before she dated him. So already you got an unlikable mayor, you have an interracial marriage, and then you have an interracial marriage with a woman who was with a black woman, like locks, whole shit, not like
like her girlfriend might have worked for transit,
right? like these niggas went to poetry readings and shit, like, you know. And
my eyes were beaming.
with some overalls on and shit.
I feel like that's where she met him, at like a fucking festival or something. I don't know. Whatever. I'm making up some shit, but still, I'm just saying I do not see them being marketable to America. I just don't. I just don't. Yeah. Because we don't, again, we.
I don't know what it. I don't know what his end game is because, like Nas said, we don't even fuck with him here in New York. So I don't know what book or anything he thinks he's going to sell.
Maybe it is to raise his national profile for the next move after, you know, his term is up. I don't. That's
maybe you just want to get on CNN and be one of those guys. Maybe you want to be on CNN with those other people like every week and talk about shit. I don't remember.
Like yeah.
Elliot, I don't know.
Like Elliot Spitzer had a bigger profile than fucking Bill de Blasio before everything went. Like it's just it's like Sean said, you have to be such a fucking piece of wood to not have some kind of prep. But he avoids it. Like he's antisocial. He pisses everybody off because he's notoriously late to everything, ceremonies, events, whatever. Like it's just I just don't know how you make that fly. And I've heard some of his speeches in other places, and I'm like, oh, if you sounded like that when you were here, we might have a different thing going on. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so whatever. He ain't winning. And, you know, we'll be checking back in on the race for president, you know, as it gets closer. It's not something we're going to talk about weekly right now because it's not worth it, and it's mad frustrating. So, you know, but in the next, you know, every – you know, a few weeks or so, we'll kind of check back in and see what's going on. I think that's it, man. I think we're going to wrap it up. Y'all have a great weekend. We back on iTunes.
Yes, thank you all for checking. We appreciate y'all.
Hey, and also, too, you guys, please go in and rate us. Like, it really means a lot. Like, it really puts us up. It's easier for people to find us when you
rate
us.
Right, right.
So rate us. Leave us a review. We actually do read the reviews. We appreciate the love. We appreciate the criticism. We
have all that.
We take that under consideration.
So we appreciate all that. So please go in, you know, listen to the front end of the show when Naima tells you what to do.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, we'll see y'all. We got some news coming for you soon.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.